you to the Wrestling with Life podcast.
Hello, wrestling fam, and welcome back to yet another episode of Wrestling with Life, another guest episode, baby. We got my frickin' dad on the mic today. If you are brand new to the podcast, my name is M. Led. Thank you so much for joining. So frickin' happy that you're here. Wrestling with Life is all about getting out of our heads together, baby. So if you have a lot of big dreams and goals, but you constantly battle with yourself and constantly get in your own way, then you are exactly the type of person that this podcast is for. Punch that follow button and join the motherfucking wrestling squad. My dad is here to tell y'all how to live a life full of integrity. I know everyone's biased and thinks their dad is amazing and the best guy in the world, but mine actually is. He has just modeled to me and my siblings how to live a life of integrity, how to be the kind of person that you want to be even when nobody's watching. My dad always does what he says he's going to do. He always follows through on his commitments, and he has just an amazing reputation in the community that we've grown up in and literally everywhere that he goes. And my dad is spilling the tea on how to live your life with integrity in this episode. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Led himself, who is the reason why I'm M. Led. We got J. Led, Ben Led, and Mama Led. We got Led on the mic. So let's get into it. All right, wrestling fam, welcome back to another episode of Wrestling with Life. I am so, so, so excited to introduce to you my dad, who's on the podcast. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Good. How are you feeling?
Pretty excited.
I'm so excited. I've been wanting to get you on the podcast since I started it. We've had Mom, Jenna, and Ben on. So now, naturally, it's your turn.
Saving the best for last.
The best for last, baby. I had to pick you to talk about topic of integrity because you, I mean, you already know this, but I got to tell everybody else how I see you. You are just a man of integrity. You always do what you say you're going to do. You don't make promises you can't keep. And I think growing up, you know, we heard from you more than anyone else in our life. If you make commitments, you got to stick to them.
Yep.
If you're going to do anything, you're going to give all to it. You're going to give your best foot forward as much as you can. And you were just always that person who pushed me in life. So I knew I had to bring you on to talk about integrity.
I'm excited. Let's see where this goes.
Let's do this. Okay. First, I want to talk about our relationship and kind of how you raised us as kids. So I guess I kind of already touched on it, but something I also want to say is that you always made it a point to share your emotions, I think, in front of us.
For good or bad.
For good or for bad. But like, you were never afraid to cry. You cried in front of us. You spoke your true feelings. And I felt like you and Mom kind of created a space for us to do that too. Like, we've never been shy to share our true feelings with each other. And I feel like that has to do with integrity as well. Like, living a life that's authentic to you and true to you. Is that like a conversation that you and Mom ever had or decided upon together? Or is that just kind of like who you were as people?
Well, I mean, we had 5 years together as a married couple before having kids. So I think that allowed us time to get on the same, you know, wavelength.
And yeah.
If I had started having kids when I was 22 years old, I don't think I would have been ready. You know, men don't mentally mature until later than women. Mom, I'm sure, would have done a great job no matter when we started having kids, but I definitely needed that time to grow up a little bit and kind of find out who I was as a human being and making sure that I was ready to be responsible for other people.
Yeah.
Big commitment.
Huge commitment. Okay. So you've always, you know, told us kids to stick to our commitments, to push ourselves, to take accountability and grow in our faith, especially. And I know, like, when I have guests on, I always ask them to bring a quote to kind of set the stage for what we're going to talk about today. So I know you have a couple Bible verses, and I'd love for you to share them with us.
Sure. So, I mean, I could give a multitude of verses, but three that, you know, once I sat down and thought about specific verses that tied into how I've tried to lead my life. The first one is Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And that talks about commitment and pushing yourself, you know, doing what you say you're going to do because you know you have the strength of God behind you.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty important. And then the second one is Matthew 5:37. But let your yes be yes and your no be no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. And I think that really ties into having, you know, personal accountability and integrity, because if you say yes, well, that means yes. You don't have to, you know, I swear to God that I'm going to do this. You know, if you say yes, that's your word, and that means everything.
Yeah. Is that something that you've always kind of found easy to do? Is like, if you commit to something, you're always going to follow through with it?
I think it's been a learned thing. I don't really think that I can think of one big area where I've said I'm going to do something and then intentionally didn't do it.
Yeah.
Circumstances might have prohibited something from happening, but it's never, you know, an intent where, yeah, we're going to do this and then just go, yeah, we're not going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes too, people will like, they'll say I can do that and they overcommit, or they say yes because they feel like they have to. Are there any situations where like you say yes and you regret it later?
Well, yes. I can think of one I'm in right now. So part of the job we're doing right now, it involves mentoring. And I signed up to be a mentor before I fully knew all the nuances of our job. And it's been very, very hard for me to find quality time to spend with my mentor. And I don't think I've done a very good job of that. So that probably in retrospect might have been something that I waited another year to do.
Yeah.
But I was so excited to do it that I didn't want to say no.
Yeah.
But then in retrospect, I probably should have said no.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've let that young man down.
Oh. Well, let's back up and inform the people what's going on in your and mom's life. Because recently, my mom and dad took on a brand new job that required you to move across the state and kind of restart in a lot of ways. Do you want to explain what you guys are doing?
Sure. So we both retired from our jobs. You know, I'd been a teacher, coach, athletic director for 34 years, and just time for something new, time for a new phase of life. So we'd always heard about the Milton Hershey School. So we decided that we'd investigated a little bit more. We knew a young lady that went here and graduated from here and is doing quite well for herself.
Uh-huh.
And it's a school for underprivileged youth. And, you know, after investigating it, we said, wow, this is definitely something we agree with the mission. We know people that are, you know, students that have been here. And we also know other couples that, well, one couple that were house parents, and the impact that they have been able to make on other kids' lives was something that we felt that we wanted to do as well. And we thought we would, you know, give it a try. And we thought we might, you know, with the experience of raising our own kids and me working with kids my entire life and mom spending a large chunk of her life also dealing with kids, mm-hmm. that we'd be, you know, it'd be right up our alley.
Yeah.
So we're now in a situation where we are, you know, rotating in through three high school girls' homes and just helping, you know, get them through this phase of their life.
Mm-hmm. Serving as house parents.
Yes, house parents.
Yeah. So this mentorship thing that you took on was in addition to what you were already doing at the school?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the requirement of that? Is it like a once a week thing?
It's as often as you can. You know, he's a senior and he's busy. And, you know, when he has free time, it's when I work. And when I have free time, it's when he's in school. So it's hard. And, you know, we travel a lot on our days off. So that makes the time that we would have off almost impossible to try to get together because of our family not being in the area.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a real life situation then where you can kind of explain how you would handle a situation like this. So you find yourself in a situation where maybe you've taken on more than you can handle. What's the approach, or like what are next steps you take, or how do you handle the situation?
Well, I haven't handled it yet. So that's part of the problem here is I don't know a good way to be able to bring this to where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I got to figure that out through prayer.
Through prayer, yeah. And honesty. And like if it does get to be too much, like at one point you might have to say that and then figure out where to go from there.
Yeah.
So for us kids growing up, I mean, you always seem to me, and like kids are going to be biased, like dad's amazing. But like I saw that even as I grew up from a kid into my adult life. You've just created such a reputation for yourself where it's like people know you as just like someone who's reliable. I never hear you like bad mouthing other people. I never hear you like going out of your way to be negative. But like you said, you weren't always that way. So can you kind of explain like growing up, maybe how you learned that living a life of integrity was important to you and kind of like how you got to that point?
Sure. I mean, I always had not a fear, but maybe a healthy respect of doing what's right. And I think that came from my mom, especially saying to me things like, hey, you know how to act, you know how you've been raised, and you know, you are who you are when nobody's around watching you. So, you know, do the right thing. And I always had that fear of letting them down, disappointing them. And I think that was a motivator. I use fear, but that's the wrong word. I didn't want to disappoint.
Yeah. Is that kind of how you feel now? Is like you don't want to disappoint other people, or is it like yourself as well?
Well, it's definitely deep inside me. Like, you know, if your mom and I'll have a disagreement about something, I'll reflect on it. And if I'm wrong, which is 95, 99% of the time, I will come around to realize, okay, this is where I made a mistake and this is what I need to do to correct it.
Yeah.
So I think it's an internal reflection. Going back to that question, like, is there a couple instances? Yeah. So my mom and dad, I think, instilled those values in me. But mm-hmm. then there was a story from I was probably 8 years old. And I had a friend who lived down at the end of my street. And I know you've heard this story. You know what I'm going to talk about.
I love this story.
But whenever we would go over there in the summer and we would play, you know, when we would play, they had a freezer on their porch. And mom, my friend, would always give us popsicles.
Yeah.
So I went over there one day and knocked on the door. They weren't home. I said, well, I'm going to help myself to a popsicle, because if he was here and we would play, I would get a popsicle. Yeah. So I might as well get the popsicle at least. So I did it and, you know, didn't think anything of it at the time. But then when I got back home, I said, wow, that probably wasn't a very good thing to do. So like I said, I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
So I attribute that to the Holy Spirit working inside me, because I don't know that an 8 year old has that intrinsic knowledge of right and wrong. Maybe, maybe not. But I think right then, that's when I first recognized the Holy Spirit was at work in my heart and in my life. So I felt guilty about that. And so I went to that parent and said, this is what I did. I'm really sorry. I won't ever do it again.
You turn yourself in.
As an 8 year old. And then there's another story that I was a young teacher coach and coaching wrestling, and we practice over in the elementary school. So on the weekends, you know, that's a big responsibility. You got to make sure the doors are open. The doors are, you know, locked, lights are out when you leave, because you're the only one in the building. And if you obviously leave a school open, it can get broken into and bad things can happen.
Yeah.
So practice ended and it was a, you know, long week, whatever. I clearly remember not closing the doors, making sure that the doors were locked. So Monday, the elementary principal calls me and asks me about it. And I said, yeah, you know, I did not check the doors. So if they were left unlocked, it was probably my fault. And he's like, you're admitting that you did it? And I go, well, I can't definitively say that they were locked. So yeah, it probably was me if I was the only one in the building. I go, I apologize and it'll never happen. Never let that happen again. And that really resonated with him and made an impression. I said, wow, doing the right thing and being willing to accept the consequences for mistakes that you make is huge.
Mm.
So I was probably at that point, we didn't have you guys yet. So I was probably 24, 25. So that, you know, really hit home.
Yeah, that's really powerful, because I think a lot of us, we don't want to admit that we're wrong or that we've messed up, because we think that it will cause other people to look at us differently or to lose respect for us, or that it's just going to like blow things up in our life.
Mm-hmm.
But what you just said is kind of the experience that I've had in my own life. Like, even taking accountability when, like, you know, you handled a situation wrong, like maybe you got too emotional with someone. Like, I'm the type of person, you know, I can blow up in moments and I have to ask for forgiveness later. But the fact that you can humble yourself and come back and say like, hey, I was wrong or I messed up, 9 out of 10 times, I feel like all that does is kind of like strengthen the bond that you have with that person and the trust, because everybody can relate to not being a perfect human, right? And
sure.
And making mistakes. And it's easier to have grace for someone when they're willing to admit that straight up.
Yep. I agree. I'm glad I learned that early.
Yeah.
Because the earlier you learn stuff like that, I think the better you learn the lesson and it sticks with you.
Yeah. Do you think it's normally like people's ego that gets in the way of coming clean in those situations or owning up to things?
Absolutely. Because like you said, nobody wants to admit they make a mistake. And it might be an ego thing, but it's I think nobody wants to be looked at as less than how they perceive themselves.
Yeah.
So sometimes they need to maybe manufacture things that aren't true in order to build themselves up.
Yeah.
I don't know if I did a good job of explaining that or not, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
No, 100%. I also can relate to like wanting to be in control of situations and wanting to control how things play out. And so like, I think everyone can relate to that kind of panicky feeling when like something starts to go sideways and your brain starts to go down the rabbit hole of how it could blow up your life in some mm-hmm. way, or how it could drastically change things, and you go into cover up mode or fix mode. Do you ever, even now, does your mind ever go there and you have to course correct and be like, no, Ron, we need to do the right thing? Or is it like after a certain period of time of like living your life in a certain way that kind of just goes away?
No, I think you always are looking for a way to be honest, but spend it in the best possible way.
Yeah.
So I think that's just human nature, you know, and I'm sure that I do it some. I can't think of an instance where that happens, but I know that when I've made a mistake and I realize it could be something bad.
Yeah.
You get that pit in your stomach.
Yeah.
And you just know, oh, crud.
Uh-huh.
What's coming down the pike next?
Yes. And that is like the worst feeling ever, because then my mind starts going to like every worst possible outcome.
Yes.
And trying to prepare myself for how I would respond in like any situation. And something that I always come back to is like, okay, but like you're not going to feel right about how you handle it unless it's the most honest and most full of integrity way possible. Because even if you do successfully like cover something up and like try to make it look as if something didn't happen or try to play it off or whatever, you still know what really happened.
Correct. And you have that pit in your stomach.
And you have to sit with it.
Yep.
Yeah. So guilty conscience, that's going to be motivation, I think, at least for me. I'm sure it is for you to do the right thing. What else is it about kind of like being self-aware and knowing yourself that plays into living in integrity?
Yeah. So I can't stand having a guilty conscience. So if I know I've done something wrong, and yeah, we mentioned this a little bit before, if that's nagging at you, it's the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's not something that came naturally for me. And the biggest contributor to that, I think, is my dad, actually, because he had this, we always joke around, the deny until you die mentality. Some of the things where he would defend it until the ends of the earth, even though he knew he was wrong, he would still try to spin it away so he could defend it.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that having that deny till you die mentality being modeled to me wasn't good, but I think it also maybe helped me realize how ridiculous it was.
Yeah.
And that if you get to that point in a discussion or an argument where you know that you're wrong, just admit it and move on.
Yeah.
It's time to, you know, fight another battle, I guess, or live to fight another day.
What did you say yesterday that Grandpa had said?
I think it might have been, this wasn't it, this is a good one. So Kings Island had, when I was growing up, a new roller coaster. It's called the Beast. And when your mom and I first started dating, we went to Kings Island that summer. She came out to visit me.
Uh-huh.
And we'd just gotten back. So I was talking about the Beast and how fun of a ride it was. And my dad was like, yeah, that's that stand-up roller coaster. And I'm like, no, Dad, that's King Cobra that you stand up on. The Beast is a sit-down roller coaster. So he went into this 10-minute thing on how we were wrong, even though we'd just come from the amusement park and ridden a ride.
And this was before Google, so you couldn't pull it up.
I couldn't get a website out and show him. It's like, fine, you're right, Dad. The Beast is a stand-up roller coaster.
And he would just stand behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deny until you die.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So let's pivot a little bit.
Pivot?
What is one way that you are currently working on yourself?
So when I knew that was one of the questions you're going to ask me, two things that popped into my mind were prayerfulness. I'm not as deeply prayerful as I would like to be. And since I wrote that down, it hasn't gotten any better, but I'm still working on it. And the other one is I want to work on remaining physically fit as we age. So your mom and I, since January, have been working out regularly, lifting weights and getting on her the treadmill and me the elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been playing a lot of pickleball.
Heck yeah, you
How'd
have.
That go? How'd that go 2 days
of
ago?
Of course you're going to bring that up. I knew you were going to bring that up. I'm going to beat you later today and all will be right in the world. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. We're not competitive or anything.
Not at all. Going back to prayerfulness. So this is something that I used to be really good at growing up. I felt like, and this is because of you guys, like you instilled this in us growing up. We would pray as a family together every night before bed. And normally when my head hits the pillow, I'll just spend time talking to God. And I really got away from that for a long time in my life. And more recently, I've introduced it back in and I'm noticing just like a weight of anxiety that's lifted off me when I do talk to God at night.
Mm-hmm.
For you, like, why is it that you want to be more prayerful?
Why do I want to be more prayerful? Because we're called to be. And I also feel that my life runs more smoothly when I go to God with all things. You know, not even just requests, but just thankfulness. And, you know, God, thank you for giving us 3 great kids, for, you know, working through, you know, the early ups and downs of our married life.
Yeah.
And just, you know, provision that he's had for us. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough to have great jobs our entire lives. And,
yeah.
You know, we never put, you know, like material wealth as a high priority, but we've never wanted for anything. And just good stuff to be thankful for.
100%. So for anyone who's not, maybe doesn't believe in God or hasn't grown up in organized religion, prayerfulness for you, like you're kind of saying, before you take action, you want to talk to God about it and you want him to give you direction for what to do, what does that feel like? And what does kind of like consulting God before you do things, like what are the feelings that come with that? What are you looking to feel or to happen when you go to him about stuff?
So we ask God to, you know, if this is not, if we're not in your will, reveal that to us, whether, you know, you close a door or something else better comes along, or you put somebody in our life that speaks to us in a way that maybe tells us that the road we're heading down or wanting to head down is not the right way. You know, people that don't have faith still should have some sort of moral compass, and that inkling that maybe a coincidence that they have in their life, you know, really isn't a coincidence, but it's a divine appointment. And it's God putting someone or something in their path that speaks to them and maybe helps them work through situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to good friends, talk to, you know, the people that you work with. Maybe they are people of faith, and maybe God's going to lay something on their heart to tell you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more people that you can involve in the decisions you make, I think if they care about you and have your best interest at heart, it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's kind of a weird misconception for people maybe who don't have faith, and maybe even Christians too, where the voice of God or the direction of God or God speaking in your life, you kind of even said this last night, is like a loud booming voice. And you've never experienced that.
No.
No. I've never experienced that. I think for me, it's kind of what you just said, like I'll hear something right on time from someone that just makes me like, did you really just say that? And like, it, something clicks in my head and I feel like I have clear vision. And then like the Holy Spirit or your intuition, kind of interchangeable terms in my opinion, like that, your subconscious that kind of guides you, or like, you know, what right choice you should make or what decision, or, you know, even baby steps to get to where you want to go.
Sure.
Anytime that someone says something that resonates with my soul in that way, I kind of always attribute that to being from God.
Oh, absolutely. So I can like think of one specific moment that, I don't know, I was probably not leading my life the way that I should have been at that time. And somebody who I don't think was a believer at that time kind of spoke to me and said, hey, you know, I don't know if that's wise to do that, because I know that I don't do that kind of stuff. I was like, okay. So that was someone speaking to me. Maybe God was speaking through him to speak to me, and
yeah.
I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
But that's something that's always stuck with me. And it wasn't anything real bad, but it was just something stupid.
Yeah. It was course correcting you
yes.
in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always really thankful for the friends who aren't afraid to say those kind of things to you.
Exactly.
I think sometimes, you know, like you just get so in your own head with things, and it's good to trust yourself, right? But like surrounding yourself with good people who also have your best intentions at heart and are going to tell you when you're being an idiot is also really important.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. So I know obviously like you and mom coming to Hershey, that was a very prayerful decision. Do you have any other examples of times that you really were talking to God before you made a choice?
Wow. So yeah, and again, it goes back to the early days of when mom and I were first married, and we went through a period of, you know, almost 5 years where we weren't intentionally not trying to have kids, but we weren't able to have children.
Right.
Mom wasn't able to get pregnant. And that was one of those areas that it was hard because we didn't know what God had planned for. So we, you know, we obviously did pray about it a lot, and we went to the steps of even, you know, looking into adopting. And I can remember going to, it was a Promise Keepers convention in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we're at the old Three River Stadium, and there's, you know, 50,000 men. It was a men's organization, men building up other men in,
okay.
in the areas of faith and things. So I can remember being there, and, you know, we were actually in the infield on the ground, not mm-hmm. in the stands, and they did an altar call. And I don't remember standing up. I don't remember walking to the aisle. All I knew is all of a sudden I was at the altar giving my life to Christ. And remember, he said, It's good to cry.
It's good to cry. Let it out.
But I think that was like a real, you know, turning point in my life that I could say, okay, all right, you're serious about your faith. You're serious about who you are as a child of God. And it was like a week after that, mom found out that she was pregnant.
No way. Did you ever tell me this before? I feel like I've never heard this.
So we can, you know, get mom and verify the details.
Mom,
I think she's in the kitchen here washing dishes. I don't know. But yeah, it was something along those timelines. Mom remembers the details better. But yeah, absolutely. And it was a really, really cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's God like acting in your life in a very like, you can't deny that type of way.
We attribute it 100% to God, whether or not it was just, you know, our time and that it meant was meant to happen or yeah. not. But yeah, we attribute it to God.
Yeah. Oh, gonna make me cry. I love seeing you get emotional just because, like, I think it's very beautiful, like, to witness something like that where, like, you're talking about an experience in your life and, like, I'm back there with you. Like, I'm visualizing what you're saying and, like, mm-hmm. just the power of that. Like, I can feel God there with you and I can feel him working in your life. So I think that's really cool.
Thanks. It is cool. I agree.
So what advice do you have for people who just feel like they have a deeper calling for their life and they don't know what it is? So, like, let me give you some context here because there have been so many times in my life, especially like growing up in my career, where you're kind of going through the motions. Like you're doing what you're supposed to do. You know, you come out of school, you're supposed to get a job. So you get that job and then you start doing it. But that piece of like fulfillment and peace and just like passion and like, this is a what I'm supposed to be doing, that is missing from it. And I think so many young adults can relate to that because how often do people graduate and find their dream job right away or find fulfillment? So I know you're going to say pray. I know you're going to say take it to God. But for you, like what other advice do you have for people who are still kind of searching for like a calling or a deeper purpose in their life?
Well, I think again, one of the things that we tried to instill in you guys at a young age was it needs to be about something bigger than you. Your life really doesn't have purpose when you're inward looking yep. and you need to give out,
yeah.
you know, and do something and be part of something that's bigger than yourself.
Yep.
And, you know, your mom and I, we were always very active in teaching Sunday school and helping out with youth group, you know, much to your chagrin when you were in high school. But it was, you know, it was our way of giving back and, you know, letting others know that, you know, God is impacting our lives. And again, you know, just because, you know, we're Christians, you know, we attribute that to God. But I think every person understands that they need to be part of society and contribute. That is if they're, you know, a good person, whether or not they have faith or not.
Yeah.
But I think being part of something bigger than yourself is huge. And if you're always looking for things that are going to make your life better, but you're not looking for things that are going to make everybody's life better, then it's not going to be as meaningful.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So like for anyone who has no idea where to start, like literally no clue, what are some things that you would recommend them doing or conversations you would recommend them having to kind of find that purpose?
Well, if they're in like corporate America, almost every corporation has ways that their company gives back. It might be going out and picking up trash along the roadways. It might be with Junior Achievement, you know, working with kids on a project. It might be getting involved with Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts if you're an outdoors person. It might be, you know, being the leader of the local mountain bike club, if that's what you're into. Just find something, some way that you can give back to others.
Yeah.
And you know, talk to people at your workplace and just ask them questions. Hey, you know, what do we do as a company to give back to the community?
Hmm.
And there's got to be something.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something out there for everybody. I kind of want to end on this. And I know you haven't read this book yet, but I'm still recommending it to you because it's a book that I read and I just felt like so incredibly seen and like a lot of things kind of clicked for me. It's called The Four Agreements. And it basically outlines four different principles that if you adopt these, it will lead to peace and contentment in your life and also will help you to live a life of integrity. So the four agreements are: don't take anything personally, be impeccable with your word, don't make any assumptions, and always do your best. And that always do your best one is something that I keep coming back to because in any situation that I'm not happy with myself, whether it be in my relationships, at my job, in the gym, in whatever I'm doing in life, if I know that I didn't show up that day and do my best, and your best is going to look different every day. You can't always give 100% every single day. But if I know that I didn't bring everything that I had to a certain situation, that's when I get down on myself. That's when, you know, the guilty conscience that you're talking yep. about or those feelings of like disappointment with yourself come in. It's because I know that I could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's something that motivates you. So to leave it today, like, is there anything that you would tell people, like things that you practice or, you know, ways that you go about living your life intentionally that bring you back to help you always do your best? Any pointers?
Okay, that's a lot there. So I feel that I'm not a very good sitter arounder, and I think that sometimes drives all of you guys crazy. But you know, to me, doing my best means if I see something that needs done, try to do it.
Get her done.
Yeah, and don't leave it for somebody else to do. I kind of lost track on what was your ultimate question there?
Just things that you practice often to help you stay your best. So like you were saying earlier, I mean, like you guys are being active all the time. Like your physical health and your mental health are so interwoven. So like right there, that's something that you do to take care of yourself. Yeah. So that you're being your best.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that definitely helps out because, you know, I'm a very big believer that, you know, the mind, body, and spirit work in harmony together.
Yeah.
And if one of those three areas of your life are out of whack, then it's going to affect the other two.
Facts.
And, you know, I've talked about this. And, you know, for me, you know, I'm now in a better spot to be able to keep my physical health good. And, you know, because we have time in the middle of the day where we can be active.
Mm-hmm.
And before we retire from our previous jobs, you need to get them, do something before work or do something at the end of the day, which, you know, sometimes my days didn't end until 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And you just didn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And now we have that built-in time to do it, and it's helping. It really is helping. So if that physical aspect is taken care of,
yeah,
then you know, the morning we try to reserve for the spiritual side of things, you know, and the mental part just comes from staying sharp and active and doing Sudokus and Wordle and all that stuff. So
I love that. No, that's good advice. Well, Dad, I love you so much.
I love you, Em.
Thank you for coming on. I think that your wisdom is going to help a lot of people who are still trying to figure it out. And, you know, me included, like just growing up under your mom's roof and having people who continually believe in me and push me to be my best. Like you've never missed a game, a meet, any way to support me. You've always made me feel like I could do anything that I put my mind to. And so everything that I am today, I have you to thank for that. So I love you and thank you.
I love you too, sweetie.
Wrestling fam, that concludes the episode with my dad, with Led. I hope that there were some amazing takeaways for you in the epi. I'm so proud of him and how he carries himself. If you guys enjoyed this episode and if you've been enjoying Wrestling with the Life, please leave me a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen. Reviews help the podcast to grow. And when we grow, we can get more amazing guests just like my dad on this mic to spill the tea on how you can step into your most authentic self, how you can live your best life, how you can chase down those dreams and goals, and how you can get out of your head. So please do that for me, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. And don't forget to get out there, grab life by the freaking balls this week, RKO the shit out of life, and live your life with integrity. Over and out. Bye-bye.